Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order this 26th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Weingard. I'm Sergeant Steele in Hunterdon County. I'll ask the other members to introduce themselves.
Scott Whitenack, public member from Morristown. And I did talk to Kurt Olstead. He will be here today, but I'll see he's running late.
Elizabeth Calabrese, Bergen County Freeholder.
Michael Sullivan.
Glenn Bertrand, Sussex County Freeholder.
Janice Kovach, Councilwoman Towns, Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Jack Schreier of Morris County Freeholder.
Debbie Pasquarelli, Greenwich Township, Warren County Representative.
Tracy Carluccio, Public Member, Hunterdon County.
Tim Dillian, I'm Public Member, and I'm from Mercer County.
Mimi Letts from Persephone.
And Lois Cuccinello had a family emergency come up today, so she cannot be here. This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. All who wish, please rise to the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and welcome to the meeting. We have minutes from the, for one thing, the agenda, and I think all the documents we'll discuss are on the back table, so if anyone, members of the public, have not picked those up, please feel welcome to do so. We have minutes from our last meeting, which was March 9th. A motion to approve those minutes?
Move.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any comments or corrections to the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Abstention.
I'll just note in my report in the packets for today's meeting is a copy of the council's annual report for 2005. This is a statutory obligation that we prepare such a report. We have the report is pretty dry and factual, and I think accurate about what the council did during 2005. It is going to be on the council's website by tomorrow, I guess, and is being distributed electronically rather than being printed, but anyone is welcome to download a copy. It has been sent to the governor and the members of the legislature as required by the law. I'm going to add to the agenda a report from the Land Conservation Committee, Debbie Pasquarelli, to talk about the Landowners Forum that occurred last night, and otherwise we will follow the agenda essentially as it is before us. Are there any items members would like to report on at this time?
I would just like to report that, and I forgot the date last month, that I participated in a radio debate on the subject of the Highlands Act. And is Sue here? Yeah, there she is. Sue Buck and I, we found that there's some things we had common ground on and some things we had differences on. It was a lively discussion. We thought it went so well we should have our own weekly show. But those of you who would like to hear it, it is available on the internet on WRNJ. Should we have somebody here? I forget who's an employee of them, what the website is, but encourage you to listen to it. It was a good experience.
Debbie, it's WRNJ.com.
It's WRNJ. I thought it was oldies1510.com.
That's the internet email address.
That's the email address. Okay. WRNJ.com.
Executive Director's report, Fountain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The council staff, unfortunately, has had some attrition over the past year, and we have been short-staffed for a bit of time. And then on the unfortunate side of the ledger, Laura Swack and Aaron Thompson are having their last day on Friday. They're moving on to other activities, and we wish them well. On the positive side of the ledger for us, we have gotten approval to move forward and hire six new people for the staff, and that will help us to staff up. That those positions reflect backfills for some of the positions that we have lost through the year, and we are very excited about that because it will allow us to focus our new hires on some of the positions we need to do a successful regional master plan and then be able to implement it. Some of those positions we hope will be in our planning staff, in our science staff. We also have other miscellaneous activities we need to cover, including grants administration and working on our communications, government relations, and drafting the plan. So we're very fortunate in this very difficult budget time to have gotten the authority to go ahead and do some backfills. So, you'll be hearing more from the personnel committee later, but it's very good news from a staff point of view. We also have had some good news in terms of agencies that are willing to help us in our mission and share staff. In particular, Debbie Lawler. Is Debbie here? Could you step up and stand up, Debbie, if you would? I'll embarrass her for a second, but give the council members a chance to see Debbie. Debbie is the chief planner at the Metals Commission. She is going to be on loan to us for about 6 months, and the purpose is to help us work on the regional master plan. It's very exciting for us and for the staff because she brings over 20 years of experience in regional planning to the table. And she also was one of the principal authors on their recent amendment to the Meadowlands master plan. And go figure, but we're actually working on the master plan ourselves. So. She will be working with Chris Dennis as our chief planner, and we really appreciate and welcome you, Debbie, to the team. That's going to be a big help. In terms of some of the events that have been happening, there was a land trust rally on the 25th that Tom represented the staff on. Our tech planning charrette, which was March 28th and 29th, and you'll be hearing more in detail about how successful that event was. There were other events, the Seamless event on the 28th, the New Jersey Association of Realtors, Ag Leadership Conference, and Sustainability Conference in Princeton are some of the events that staff attended over the last 2 weeks. And in that, in those events, was able to tell folks a little bit more about what the council's doing, what the Act sets out for us in terms of our regional master plan, and to speak to some of the issues of the folks who are attending. For upcoming events, we have the New Jersey Environmental Federation Conference on April 8th, and at that event, the governor, we hear, intends to speak. On the 19th, the Hunterdon County Tax Board is having a meeting. 27th, 6:30, will be our first municipal roundtable or question and answer session. This will be with the municipal towns in Sussex, which Chairman Schreier has been working on as part of our pilots for our outreach to municipalities to make sure that we have an opportunity, we've given an opportunity to municipalities to ask us questions, because we know municipalities have questions about how we're developing the plan, what it means for them, and how it will be implemented, how they can then work on implementing what we have in our plan into their local ordinances and regulations. Two other things to mention, the Raritan Compact is meeting on the 22nd. We'll be sending a representative. And in June, the New Jersey Association of Counties is having its meeting, and we'll also plan to be in attendance there. We'll make sure that members have these events on the county's calendar, which you have access to. Please let us know, in particular, if you want to attend the events. Staff will attend to participate. We find that these kinds of interactions with the public and the municipalities and counties have been very helpful in giving us input as we provide recommendations to the council about how to move forward with the plan and other matters. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for the report this week.
Questions? Well, as Dante alluded to, the council has sponsored two major events in the last week. Maybe we'll start with the one that was last night, which was a landowners forum that Pasquarelli put together and chaired.
Actually, to be honest, the staff put it together. I showed up to make the welcome. Actually, it's so recent that I haven't seen any of the reports myself. How many people did we have attend last night?
We had over 100. It was
over
a 100. Crowded, filled room.
Yes, we had. This was, we've been discussing this several months. This was the forum put together for the council to act as a facilitator between land conservation buyers and landowners who may be interested in pursuing land preservation for their property. It was an opportunity to see what the options are and really to establish contact between landowners and the various state, county, nonprofit agencies who participate in the land preservation process. We were very pleased with the response to the invitations. They had to cut off the attendance at 100. Last night, people were still calling during the week asking to attend, so there certainly seemed to be a level of interest. Early feedback was positive just by seeing what was in the room, that people were very attentive to the presentations made, and there was a lot of dialogue afterwards between the landowners and the agencies that were represented here. On behalf of the council, I thanked Green Acres and SADC, as well as the nonprofits, water providers, anybody else I've missed here, the county representatives in attendance. You'll see a report on it, but I think it succeeded in what the council's objective was, which is to put those two groups of people together, and if there seems to be an interest, we may be proposing doing another one later this year. But thank you very much to the staff who worked very hard to get that together. There was a lot of legwork involved in pulling this together. Laura did a great job.
Mr. Chairman, could I add that an electronic tape for the session is already on our website in furtherance of this council's effort at transparency and providing material for the public at the earliest convenience. So we're becoming wired for our events as well.
And the other major event, which I guess attracted even more people, was the two-day planning charrette last week with the benefit of a grant from the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation. Are you going to summarize that? Or?
I guess I'll introduce Steve to really do the full presentation. The tax charrette that everyone's familiar with, it was a very well-attended, very successful event. The attendance was really outstanding, over 140 different experts showed up, and if you could imagine a giant ballroom where there were tables everywhere and active groups were diligently going back and forth with ideas and giant whiteboards behind them coming up with lists, you'll get a good impression of how well the charrette went. I want to thank a number of members who participated, Debbie, Tracy, Tim, Janice, and I think perhaps others. All went, and it was noted that it was important that we cared about it enough that our members attended and were part of the process. In addition, we had a tremendous staff turnout involvement. Over 15 individuals from staff were there during the day, whether it was setting up or facilitating or setting up. And I believe Principal Christanis and Mary Jude Haddebweiler made sure that this event was terrific. See it as a presentation for you to give you a lot more of the details, and you can see how truly this process has been very rewarding and helps us develop our regional master plan.
Thanks. Actually, Chris and I are going to do this together. Everybody know Chris? Chris Stannis is our principal planner in the office. She actually manages the planning, what we call one of our units.
Excuse me. There you go.
Extraordinarily talented and dedicated individual, and a true asset to the council, I believe. And I want to thank her publicly for. I want to thank her publicly for all her hard work and dedication. She's truly an asset. The purpose of the meeting today is not only to focus on the charrette, but to talk broadly about the commitment that the council has to make the development of the regional master plan a very open, transparent process that invites in conflicting opinion, alternative approaches, input from a variety of stakeholder groups, in the hopes that we can build confidence and trust in the master planning process, leading to broad conformance of all the stakeholder groups upon adoption, but more importantly, to ensure that the science and decision making that goes into the planning process is as sound and as defensible as possible and represents the needs of a variety of different stakeholder groups. The charrette, or the tax charrette, was one effort to bring together a series of experts. As I'm sure you recall, one of our outreach efforts is our technical advisory committee. We have approximately 400 technical advisors on the project, representing 18 technical disciplines, ranging from water resources to land use planning to brownfields redevelopment. This was the second in a series of meetings with our TACs, formal meetings in which we solicit their input, put out ideas and suggestions, and get their reactions, some of which are positive, some of which are not. But that's part of the process of planning, is that we're building consensus, where it's not an absolute agreement on approach, but it's a general understanding of what that approach is, and ensure that there's thorough understanding and that we communicate and understanding as best as we can. The presentation that we're going to give will give you an overview of the tax charrette. Staff wanted me to advise you that this is not a reporting on the input provided by TACs, so by TAC members. There will be a separate presentation that we'll give at a later date when we've compiled all the information, because staff wants the council to have the full benefit of the issues, concerns, strategies, and recommendations articulated by our external partners as they were presented. This is an abbreviated presentation that looks to show you how we incorporate external input into the planning process and give you a sense of where we are in development of the regional master plan. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Chris to walk you through what the charrette was.
Thanks, Steve. Dante and Chairman Weingart had alluded to the fact that we had received a $35,000 grant from the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation in their 2005 environment docket. And we'd like to thank David Grant and Michelle Napick for that. Michelle is the environmental docket lead. We worked with Consilience as a consultant and their sub-revision architecture out of Pennsylvania to help us plan the charrette two-day event. And it was very successful and met the goals that we had stated for it. We wanted to identify, prioritize, and develop possible approaches and strategies for implementation of the regional master plan and use this as an outreach effort to our technical advisory committees as a way to do it both as an individual disciplines and a way to have cross-pollinization of those technical discussions within a short period of time. The charrette working groups, originally 18, were consolidated into 10. They were rolled up in a variety of ways to accommodate both staffing and the timing of the two-day period. GIS and education are two of the TAC groups that participated throughout each of the sessions because they're so important to all aspects and sort of lace through all of the technical advisory initiatives. We had about 200 people in attendance, representing about, on average, 18 people in each TAC group. There was a two-day event. On day one, we broke it into two individual sessions of individual TAC members. There was a morning session and an afternoon session. And this allowed for us to work in small groups within the disciplines of each TAC. I should let you know that out of the TAC groups were facilitators that were identified to help facilitate the session, and they were briefed on the facilitation process from consilience and revision architecture, and staff was involved in that. There was a staff member in each of the TAC groups that served to record and listen to all of the information that was being put forward, documenting it, as Steve had indicated, very succinctly. We spent many, many hours documenting and wordsmithing and deciding just which word we could come to consensus on. And I think you'll benefit from seeing that in the tax charrette report. On day two, the individual tax finished up because we didn't have a lot of time on day one, so we had half days each. So we met as a group all together on day two and finalized the recommendations from day one, individual groups. Then we met for the first time as an interdisciplinary group. We were given numbers and randomly put into groups where we could share feedback and fine-tune and hone the strategies that we had discussed individually. We then went to a lunch where David Grant gave an inspiring talk about the importance of regional planning in the context of global issues. And we all were greatly appreciative of the chandeliers, the Spanish castle, and David's time. We then left lunch and went to individual TAC sessions where we got to share feedback and refine those strategies that we had been working so hard on those 2 days as a means to present to the larger group in a plenary session the strategies that each individual TAC group had come to consensus on. The general strategies, I would say, that came out of that two-day event that people kept pointing to, regardless of what discipline they were speaking from, was that the council needs to implement a strong outreach and education and technical program as part of plan implementation. Funding kept coming up as an important issue with clearly identified incentives and disincentives. The council should serve as the clearinghouse for interagency coordination, funding, and data resources. People want to come to someone locally, put a name with a face and an understanding of what their local concerns are. That will make a difference. Ensure that the plan is strong, clear, concise, and that it's understood by our local stakeholders. And it's important that it be based on sound science and planning principles. We were asked over and over again, take time to get it right. What's going to happen next? There's going to be a full documentation of the tax charrette. It'll be compiled into a report. It'll include all of the expanded notes, the strategies that were reported out, and the approaches. Everything that happened in those rooms on those 2 days will be documented. This will be part of a continuing outreach where it will be shared with our TAC members, stakeholders, and members of the public for further discussion. And we'll continue to use this experience and documentation to consider development of the regional master plan as we move forward. The regional master plan scoping document was a document that was released in January of 2006 by the council. It sort of set the stage and framework for the regional master plan. We received about 50 or exactly 48 responses via email, fax, snail mail, or regular mail to document the commentators' concerns regarding the scoping document. They represented over 1,000 different individual comments on different topics that came from individuals, professional organizations, academia, agencies, utility representatives, and nonprofit groups. Most of them had concerns or comments regarding the format of the scoping document, opportunities for public participation in the process. They want to make sure that we have an understandable conformance program and that we prepare a science-based and environmentally balanced plan. That scoping document comment response document is being prepared by staff. It'll encompass all comments received, and it will be put out as a final document addressing all of the comments in the structure of the regional master plan components, and technical approaches and documentation. So we'll get all the comments back. It'll be a complete record of all those comments, and it'll be given back. That'll be a matrix between where you commented and where it fits into the regional master plan, so that you can use that and follow up where your comments were documented. We'll also make sure that municipal stakeholders and other county and agency stakeholders have access to it. Steve's going to give now an RMP, or regional master plan, development with key issues and next steps that we'll take you through.
So there's two challenges in developing the regional master plan. One, a commitment to science and the complications that creates. We are on, based upon the scope that was approved by council, we're developing an extraordinarily comprehensive and progressive regional master plan. I believe it is the most progressive planning effort ever undertaken in the state of New Jersey and will serve as a national model when it is completed. It deals with a wide range of technical issues. Those technical issues in themselves are very complex. The science that will support the decisions that will be necessary by council to inform the plan will be very comprehensive. But then there's the added challenge of integrating all of those separate technical disciplines into a clear, concise, and understandable plan that can be implemented by municipalities on the ground, that can inform how development occurs, where resources are that are important to preserve, how we can all work together to contribute to the protection of the Highlands resources that are so important to our communities and our future. The technical disciplines are, again, we've talked about the structure of the regional master plan. There are 10 independent technical disciplines that are being advanced. We have solicited suggestions from our TACs on strategies, how the council can address the goals of the plan through development of specific strategies. We put the scoping document out and have solicited specific comments on what's good and what's not about the scope. We are making mid-course corrections to address those concerns as much as possible, developing long-term programs to address those recommendations that cannot be accommodated within the existing available information or the existing time frame. Both the strategies and comments for each technical disciplines inform the work plan elements that will become part of the regional master plan. One of the challenging aspects of the water resources is how much water is available to support both human need and necessary to maintain ecological functions of Highlands waters. That balance is going to be an extraordinarily challenging decision-making process for the council. The science to support that is as comprehensive as I've seen, and it will be extraordinarily rewarding in the end. There's disagreements, there is expected to be disagreements, but as long as we have an understanding of our approach, as long as it's based upon sound science, and ultimately and most importantly, is defensible in the end, is what our target and what our goals are. And we will build consensus as much as possible. There are key milestones that for each of the aspects of the plan, the council must achieve to move on to the next phase of work. Some of the key critical milestones to address many of the strategies and comments we've received related to water resources, including determine how much groundwater is available within the region, where water supply growth areas are, and what amount of water is available to support that growth. How do we protect our water supply system, particularly surface water systems that are so important to New Jersey's future, both economic and social future? Where are important groundwater recharge areas that are necessary to replenish those groundwater supplies that meet both ecological and human need? And importantly, what are the sources of contamination of quality of groundwater? Septics primarily as being the target to measure that against. In the end, information will be presented to address a specific goal. Part of the water capacity goal is to determine the amount and extent of a water available that balance ecological and human needs and expressed visually. Supporting these maps are comprehensive databases, some in the millions of data points supporting the information behind this. It expresses regional variability and resource value, development opportunity that will all be used to inform the plan. In this case, water is expressed at a HUC 14 level. We'll get into that discussion more as we get present some of the results of the water capacity analysis in future meetings. Ecosystem. Part of important aspect of protecting water resources is maintaining the functioning of natural systems. Water originates from, flows across the land. You alter that landscape, you will alter both the quantity and quality of the available water supply. So maintaining ecological function within the region is going to be critical to achieve the goals of sustained protection of drinking water supplies. Again, strategies, the strong emphasis on science-based decision-making. Comments received was clear and defensible scientific information to support those decisions. Our work plan is comprehensive. We are addressing ecological resources of the Highlands, including surface water protection, stream integrity, ecological resources protection, such as protection of forest resources, critical habitat for wildlife and endangered species, as well as unique natural communities. There's a series of information milestones that have to be met to progress with the project, including where are the important streams? How do we determine why they are important? What is necessary to protect the reasons for why they were determined to be important? How do we protect stream corridors generally throughout the region from degradation due to future development? The impacts of steep slope on future development limitations. Identification and protection of important forested areas, important habitat areas, and significant natural communities. Ultimately, much of this information informs both the policy guidance document and the implementation framework, which is the end products of all this scientific analysis. An example of one aspect of development for the ecosystem analysis is looking at surface water, surface streams and lakes throughout the Highlands region. We are developing new data sets with a very high degree of accuracy. So ultimately, we can zoom in. We're looking at 850,000 acres in one shot. We can zoom into a 10-acre parcel, have a high degree of spatial accuracy, so that the information we're developing now will be useful to planning boards and doing site plan reviews, to development interests that want to utilize a site, to a landowner that wants to know what they could do on their property, or to a prospective buyer that wants to know what the limitations or opportunities are on a particular parcel. That level of spatial accuracy is very difficult. It is surpasses anything, I believe, that is currently available in New Jersey. The staff is extraordinarily dedicated to data quality, and I am very grateful for that. And a related aspect of ecosystem management is sustainable forestry. Forest management, either for the production of saw timber or for the production of firewood, or for just management of forest lands, is important to provide clear guidance on how it could be done sustainably so that that resource is always available, to provide landowners within the Highlands region the opportunity to work their land and to gain some economic benefit from land being maintained in an open state. We are examining forest resource characteristics throughout the region, distinguishing those areas that are important for protection of water supplies, those that are appropriate for active management through silviculture practices, those areas that are important for their ecological resource. Essentially, ultimately, we assign, or the process assigns value classes. It distinguishes between forest that is important regionally from forest that is not, and assign limitations on use based upon the reason for why that value is assigned, so that the use does not impair the value that the council is ultimately trying to protect. Chris?
I hear Katie's Carrick's position is open, so I'm hoping, Steve, that we could take this on the road, maybe, for the Today Show. Land preservation, stewardship, and recreation. This is a really important component of the regional master plan, and with so many of the regional master plan components, they're interrelated. No one of them stands alone, and it's that layering and that understanding and that cross-pollinization that's really important that we capture in the regional master plan. In this case, ecotourism, which is often laced through this discussion as well as the cultural and historical, embraces many aspects of the region and is important to be identified as we move through. This suggested strategies that were presented to us regarding this were really an interconnected system of publicly and privately preserved lands and make sure that we identify those interconnections and develop strategies for enhancing them and leveraging them to the next preservation step. Stable funding continues to come up regarding preservation. Education for municipalities about the benefits of preservation and stewardship, ecotourism, and importance of the Highlands region. We really need to balance the ecology of the region and the tourism and recreation. The scoping comments, a sampling of those is to include ag tourism, education again, the regional greenway approach, public access issues to trails, rivers, streams, ridgelines. Stewardship of lands is very important. A lot of lands are preserved, but the stewardship concerns of management and follow-up on those was of great concern to our commentators, both at the scoping document and the charrette. And we need to understand and survey the private land trust within the region. Some of the regional master plan work elements that are associated to this technical discipline are identify the existing preserved lands in the Highlands, develop a map of open space and preserved lands that represents an inventory that we can build upon and share with our stakeholders, identify stewardship goals and strategies, and evaluate innovative and alternative approaches that kept coming up from the commentators on both the scoping document and the tax charrette. Look outside the box and make sure that you find other ways and innovative ways of approaching something. This is your chance to do that. Identify recreation and tourism opportunities and promote tourism throughout the region. Some of the regional master plan milestones are actual outputs that will support the plan development are the identification of preservation goals and strategies and what are the land preservation needs and priorities of the region. For land preservation, we're attempting to promote a fair and compelling vision of future land protection needs and priorities throughout the entire region. We need to have compatibility of existing use and future adjacent use so that we can make sure resource implications are minimized in adjacent land uses. We need to have this information in order to inform the conservation threat assessment that will be performed as part of the land use capability map so that we can identify necessary stewardship concerns. We need to be strategic in how land preservation dollars are spent. We all know that those dollars are limited, and if we can work together to spend them, we can get more for our money. We also need to coordinate with our preservation stakeholders and work together and identify preservation priorities and develop strategies for getting there together. Historic, cultural, and scenic resource protection, again, very much related to the land pres, stewardship, and recreation. The suggested strategies that we heard about that were, again, a stable source of funding. It keeps coming up. Encourage historic preservation elements in municipal master plans, including designation of historic districts. People continue to make a connection between the municipal land use law, the regional master plan, and finding connections that may be weak or empowering them through the regional master plan. Adopt historic property reinvestment tax credit. Look at innovative ways of doing historic preservation. Use structures to accommodate new uses and generate income, and evaluate the state lease process. Also create a regional tourism council. Some of the scoping documents received were a comprehensive survey. Understand where the resources are and identify them and map them, and explain how preservation can help with your local community character and goals, and integrate this into the regional master plan and all of the components. The work plan, the work that will be done in order to meet those, is evaluate existing historic preservation programs. We want to compile all the data that exists, prepare a map and map it, compile data on funding and technical programs, and evaluate innovative and alternative approaches to package that together. We'll, as a milestone or deliverable, identify and evaluate the existing resources and the scenic resource protection strategies that we would like to adopt in the region. I think we all know how special this region is with its historic character, and we want to promote the identification, preservation, and stewardship of that historic heritage. It's very important for our region and very important for all of our stakeholders, for now and for future generations. The land use capability map, as it's developed, will consider these historic, cultural, and scenic resources, and they'll be evaluated in the context of determining land uses and adjacent land uses so that we can preserve them and empower their character and sort of leverage them through other ways. Consider existing historic, cultural, and scenic resources that have been identified to us by stakeholders, and also those that have not been identified. We need to find a way to track and identify new sites or vistas. Sustainable agriculture is very important to the region. It's an asset to this region that we need to support. Strategies are, again, dedicated funding for equity and protection and compensation. Ag-friendly municipalities, that has come up a lot through discussions I've heard. Stewardship, again, of these lands, and make sure that as they're preserved, they're taken care of. And consider the implication of how DEP rules are on the agricultural community. Wildlife control and management, particularly deer and geese management, was of grave concern, and some strategies were put forward in the charrette. And make sure that agriculture is viable. And that's important, viable for the farmers now and farmers of the future. The scoping comments dedicate allocations of water for agricultural activities. The right to farm process, make sure that communities are educated about what that means in their community and how it looks. And again, educate the ag community about resources and land protection goals that are available to them in the Act, and promote Smart Growth Guide for Agriculture, USDA Smart Growth Guide. The work plan elements that will support those strategies and comments are to define agricultural sustainability strategies. And we need to, again, evaluate innovative and alternative approaches for doing this and compile existing funding and technical programs. The criteria for applying these standards to promote a viable agricultural industry will be identified. Identify and map important ag areas, including soils of different types and what can be supported on those soils and where they exist. And inventory the preserved or assessed farmland throughout our community. The milestone is we'll put this together and identify existing ag resources in a deliverable of a technical report. In order to address the needs of farmers, we need to make farming viable in the Highlands region. And that means we have to find compatibility with land use designation in the regional master plan in order to protect this ag resource, both for the farm and the farmers. The viability of agriculture says that we don't continue to lose farmers because of economic viability, and we're not able to bring new people to farming because it's not economically viable, is of concern to many of our stakeholders. We need to identify and map ag resources and protect prime soils of the region. Ag is an asset to the region, as I've said, and ag resources need to be valued as an asset. The current valuation protocols that are used across the state may need to be modified in order to support this asset as a Highlands region resource. And the TDR program that we've put in place is evaluating and should serve as a means to provide fair compensation and equity for this resource being protected for ag lands, forest lands, and water lands. Regional development design is sort of the catch-all for the large smart growth, housing, green construction, land use planning concepts that are associated to the smart growth component of the regional master plan. We continue here to make it a tough plan, and that we need to resolve tension between competing goals as a region in this component, and be articulate and select best practices that exist in examples. Communicate. Many of our strategies are based upon a good communication and educational outreach program. Again, encourage innovative uses in both design and construction approaches. Integrate policies at all levels. It's very important that brownfield sites be recognized as a resource or restoration component or for redevelopment. Infrastructure capacity is a critical component of planning, and that really surfaces when you start looking at any of the growth or development or redevelopment potentials that we're facing. The scoping comments sort of focused on consistent municipal standards, make it understandable, tell me what I need to do in order to make this work. Technical support for a lot of municipalities that don't have those local resources and technical ability to address the plan. Understand the targets for population and employment throughout the region and how they may be implicated with land use decisions. The substantive certification allows for a variety and choice of housing, addressing affordable housing needs, and using brownfields to assess future redevelopment and create sustainable communities. And I think sustainability is thrown around a lot. It really means protecting the resource now and for future generations. The work plan elements that will be a part of this component are a build-out analysis that will look at the trend or existing zoning, the state plan based on state planning areas and centers, and then we'll go into the land use capability map and we'll come out with two additional build-out approaches. One of them will be the Highlands Land Use Capability Baseline Map, and then we'll look at regional growth areas and come up with the Highlands Growth Capacity Baseline. So there'll be four iterations of the build-out model. Brownfield site inventory, we're working very hard to identify known sites and sort of tease out those sites that from a variety of lists that may serve as potential redevelopment opportunities or contamination concerns. We also need to look at redevelopment potential with impervious surface and existing growth centers and look at potential growth areas in support of those. Housing opportunities. Many, many people have come to us about how difficult it is to afford a house in the Highlands region, and that we need to have a balance and variety of choice for all of our stakeholders. Smart design standards. The plan will present in its implementation framework minimal standards that will use design as a way to protect the resource and get us to a balanced, equitable environment for all. The milestones are the four build-out scenarios that I spoke about, and an overall component that will inform the policy guidance document and the implementation framework document. This is a map of impervious surface area and some brownfield sites that we're working on, but really the importance here is that development and redevelopment, that we encourage appropriate and compatible land uses that are consistent with the Highlands natural resources, and finding that balance is really a challenge of regional planning. It's a challenge of local planning, and it's a larger challenge for us. That interrelationship is very important. We need to do that by understanding the infrastructure capacity and the water, wastewater, transportation, all modes of transportation, transit, bus, rail, freight. What are the local conditions and visions that people see for themselves? And use design, conservation, and innovative alternative approaches to support our regional planning initiatives. Empowering sound planning decisions at the local level will be very important. We'll have to make the plan a greater success for a voluntary planning area and a mandatory preservation area. The Transfer of Development Rights Program is a program where we continue to evolve. It will be the largest regional transfer of development rights program that exists in the nation, or maybe the world, I don't know. Suggested strategies, keep allocation credits simple. Keep it simple, regional, and uniform. The TDR credit bank should serve as an exchange for the regional valuation differences. Allocate credits to undevelopable resource lands and establish means to create demand for credits. Long-term commitment to balance the supply and demand. This is an ever-involving process and allows the comments work to really do an outreach program and an education program to municipalities and look at where the potential risk growth receiving may be, incentives for municipalities and be understood, and provide cluster densities as an approach for putting growth in areas. The regional master plan work elements are exhaustive in looking at the TDR program. There are many, many things that we need to work together with stakeholders and find that balance where we can get outreach to stakeholders and work products put together in the time frame that we have ahead of us, and that's what we're trying to do. And so stakeholder meetings are very important, as well as coming up with an evaluation program that is unique to a region such as ours. The milestones are evaluate the program framework alternatives and put that out to our public so that they can understand what they are. What's the preliminary evaluation method? What's the TDR bank requirements and how will it work? And what's the credit tracking program and the allocation valuation guidelines? In order to develop an effective program that addresses landowner equity concerns and promotes efficient use of land where appropriate, it's going to be, again, very important to find that balance. This is a composite zoning map of the region. As of 2004, there were 332,620 parcels in the Highlands region. we're able to see them all, and we'll share them all with our stakeholders. We'll be able to identify and recognize the existing community character and the resources and infrastructures that exist there, as well as the constraints, and identify program conditions for a regional approach, and support these initiatives with incentives in design and education. The utility capacity is going to be a great influence on this program, where we can put TDR density, and then that's what's up next.
Just call me Regis. Another major element of undertaking by the staff is to evaluate the capacity of existing utility, focused on wastewater and water utility. Both are generally necessary to support efficient use of land within the region. The stakeholder groups identified the need for accurate and up-to-date data as a baseline to help inform subsequent decisions on where growth is appropriate and what level of growth can be accommodated. Coordinate water and wastewater policies among the various involved state agencies and work with municipalities to address their needs for wastewater and water planning. Participate in the update of the New Jersey Water Supply Plan, which is currently ongoing. Water supplies that are necessary to service communities such as Newark and Jersey City, vital to New Jersey's long-term economic viability. Evaluate impacts of interbasin transfers and groundwater withdrawals and surface water storage, and innovative technology to increase treatment plant capacity. The comments to the scoping document included such things as infrastructure capacity should not be expanded to meet the needs of growth outside of Highlands, Pennsylvania, and specifically was mentioned, and assess the levels of resource capacity at different time intervals for population and water use. The regional master plan work elements that address many of these concerns and strategies include identifying our existing water supply infrastructure, where infrastructure is planned, what areas are currently served, what is the capacity to serve existing and future development demands. Wastewater is approached in the same manner. The analysis of water and wastewater treatment demand will be an important aspect in informing where development is appropriate and what level of development can be sustained within the region. Milestones within the regional master plan include examining limits on potable water supply and wastewater treatment capacity, both of which will inform the implementation framework, particularly land use capability map. Major goal of the utility capacity is to identify the limitations of infrastructure to accommodate existing and future development potential. We're examining the existing and planned distribution of wastewater and water infrastructure and what the capacity limits of those that infrastructure is. That capacity will establish the limit of growth that is achievable, both in terms of population and economic development potential. Transportation and air quality is one of the remaining technical disciplines that are being addressed. The important aspect of the goal is to promote a safe and efficient transportation system, but the one that is consistent with the resource protection and smart growth principles outlined in the Act. Some suggested strategies from our stakeholder groups including such things as look to revise the municipal land use law to require a sustainable, accessible, efficient, and safe transportation system within municipal master plans. Land use, environmental transportation, and water allocation plans should be coordinated and integrated as much as possible so that we're building roads where growth can be accommodated based upon the limitations of the land and the resources to support that growth. Modify road capacity restrictions per Highlands Act and define. Concerns are expressed that the Act itself may impose restrictions that create an obstacle to meeting future transportation needs, and that will need to be addressed. Participate in transportation planning and programming with the North Jersey Transportation Planning Association, which is the primary agency or nonprofit corporation that's responsible for distribution of federal aid for transportation improvements. And invest in transportation demand management. Small opportunities make big changes. Sco- scoping comments included such things as no highway capacity expansion due to concerns that it increases or drives sprawl. Roadway improvement should take local road off major road corridors as much as possible to help alleviate congestion. Define how the RMP will guide transportation funding priorities, focusing those funding where it's most needed to meet existing and future population growth. Utilize context-sensitive design. Design transportation improvements in a manner that is consistent with resource and smart growth principles. Recognize scenic byway designation. Make transportation part of the smart growth component, and evaluate air quality implications on public and forest health. The regional master plan elements primarily focus on examining capacity limitations within existing transportation network and inventory where that network is and how that network can best serve existing and future populations. Evaluating and inventorying air quality concerns, both from mobile and stationary sources, that create concerns with regard to public health and ecological health as well. Critical milestones necessary to complete the regional master plan include completing the transportation system capacity assessment and the complete inventory of air quality concerns. A capacity-based model that's being performed to look to promote a safe and efficient transportation system without compromising smart growth and resource protection goals of the Act examines limitations in the existing roadway network, identifies where capacity is at or exceeds existing roadway capacity, where improvements may be necessary based upon the future projected growth within areas that are served by those transportation corridors. Final element of technical discipline being assessed as part of the regional master plan includes the financial analysis, a critical component. What is the cost and economic benefits through implementation of the regional master plan? Important strategies identified include recognize that the economic value of water resources in establishing a dedicated funding source, again, for land acquisition, a major concern that comes up over and over from all our stakeholder groups. Link land acquisition to natural resource protection and water quality. Be strategic in how we spend that money. Tax stabilization through guaranteed and predictable financial mechanisms. Be strategic in how we invest in local investments to stabilize property taxes. Assess the economic impacts of the regional master plan for each municipality and provide assistance accordingly. Scoping comments were generally consistent, including quantifying the cost of water treatment to help inform the financial analysis of the financial benefit of the plan, and measure and express the economic value of open space as also an economic benefit. The regional master plan elements include two primary financial analyses, a fiscal impact assessment that looks at assessing the effect on local tax base through implementation of the plan, and the cash flow timetable that looks to project costs for implementation of the plan over a 5 and 10 year period. Key milestones include the results of the financial analysis based upon the build out assessment, and the cash flow timetable as well, based upon the results of the build-out analysis. The work undergoing currently is compiling a series of data sets that or economic indicators to show the past and to ultimately be used to project the future economic condition of the region, change of population, household income, land values, etc. Finally, all this information has to be drawn together in a series or a number, a very large number, of policy decisions. The strategies, the comments that are provided by your stakeholders will help to inform those policy decisions, but the Council will have to make a series of policy decisions to determine how the regional master plan can be finalized and ultimately implemented. The implementation framework, what a municipality has to do to conform with the regional master plan, is going to be an important process. It will explain how conformance will occur, what a municipality's obligation in order to conform will be. Some suggested strategies from our stakeholders included developing an implementation framework that is, includes strong outreach, education, and technical support, and ensure that the details are understood by local stakeholders and clearly identify incentives and disincentives included within the plan. The scoping comments that we received included such things explaining how the regional master plan could be applied locally, a primary purpose, function of the implementation framework, and consider both planning of conformance and development application review, which is a major area of responsibility of the council. The regional master plan work plan elements include develop a conformance process guidance document that summarizes the land use capability map standards, including resource protection, smart design, and growth standards. Establish incentives programs and integrate them into the land use capability map. Ultimately, the milestone that has to be achieved for the regional master plan to be completed is preparing a conformance guidelines. A major element of the implementation framework is the land use capability map, which identifies where land is appropriate for growth and where it is not, what level of intensity of development can be accommodated without impairing the resources within the Highlands region. Some suggested strategies was a strong reliance on science-based decision-making in developing the land use capability map, and the importance of taking the time to get it right, recognizing the comprehensive nature of the plan. The elements include a plan that include a land use capability map that will fully integrate protection of water resources and ecological resources, that will be based upon the capacity limitations of water and wastewater utility, that will be cognizant of the need to protect the agricultural community within the region, and will allow for regional growth and the redevelopment opportunities that are consistent with those capacity limitations. The milestones are the standards and the map that ultimately support and implement the plan. All of this information has to be presented in a manner that is clear, concise, and understandable to a local official, the ones that ultimately will make the decision to conform and implement the plan locally. The policy guidance document is the final element of the regional master plan. It is a summary of all the decisions the council makes, the basis of those decisions, and what it means to a municipality. As a municipal official wanting to know what the regional master plan is and what it means to them, they would look to the policy guidance document. The policy guidance document elements are broken up into the six major components required under the Act, including the resource assessment, smart growth component, transportation, local participation, a demonstration of our commitment to involve our local stakeholders and to be transparent in the process of regional master plan development, a consistency and coordination with other affected state and federal agencies to promote a consistent, understandable, and predictable process to accommodate future land use decisions, and the financial component. What will it cost, and what are the economic benefits of implementing the regional master plan? The regional master plan needs to maintain a commitment to the best available science and progressive planning to inform sound land use decisions. We've created a structure upon which we're developing the plan. That a structure is sound, it has withstood scrutiny, it has gained the support of a wide variety of stakeholders, and we are very proud of the work that we have accomplished to date. Thank you for your attention. We would be happy to answer any questions if you have any. Or
Chris, this presentation is basically an introduction to the Bureau of Services, and introductions and discussion. We're going to have a couple minutes about plan completion schedule. Any questions this time?
I did have a question, Mr. Chairman. Steve and Chris, thank you. That's outstanding. Impressed by the level of depth that we, the council, through your efforts, are going to go through to get what we hope is an effective and fair regional master plan. And I'm sure Kurt agrees with me that I appreciate the emphasis on agriculture and agricultural biodiversity. It's really only find more markets for performance products. I had several questions, but I'm only going to limit myself to two. We talked about the land stewardship of the protected land. Has there been a discussion about who will be the stewards of it? Will it be the property owners, will it be the state, will it be some other entity created?
I just said that I haven't been directly involved in all of those conversations, but I think it's a variety of and coming up with a strategy that's all-encompassing and funding to support that. That's one of the things that's definitely missing, but it's talked about as a multi-tiered approach.
When I served on the State Fish and Game Council, that was always a question. As the state kept acquiring lands,
who's going to manage it?
Who's going to look over it? Who's going to protect it? So I think that's something.
And that was recognized as a need, definitely.
And my second question is the evaluating the impact of interbasin transfers, specifically. This is a task that the DEP now undertakes, and the allocations are determined by the DEP at the present time. Are we going to be duplicating their efforts, superseding their efforts, or yielding to their efforts?
I would suggest we will be partnering in those efforts. It's important to recognize that there are other agencies that have statutory obligations for a variety of different resource protection goals. I do not believe it is the capacity or the mission of the council to try to usurp or challenge those goals, but to partner to ensure that the decisions that are reached are consistent with what the council envisions as the needs for the region. And I would suggest we will continue to partner. It's a mutually agreeable end.
Did I understand that this 52 slide presentation is now on our website?
It will be posted.
Okay.
Thank you both. We'll come back to you in a few minutes. Among the committees that met since the last council meeting, in fact, today with the Personnel Committee, as Dante mentioned, we have received approval. From the governor's office with the help of the Department of Environmental Protection to fill six of the vacant slots on the council staff. We were originally approved for 28 slots when the council was formed. We have never had more than 24 people. I believe at a point we now have 18 and we've been approved to fill six, which is not to mention, I think, given the current times, is certainly a good thing. So the staff recommendation to the Personnel Committee was that we fill those six positions in the following way. That we have one person who is now on the staff as a consultant, as who is a planner, who we would negotiate with to offer a full-time job, filling one of those slots. For the other five slots, we would advertise four different job descriptions. We would advertise for a water resources engineer, water management, resource management specialist, a government affairs coordinator, and an outreach and grants coordinator. And we would essentially review the resumes we get, and the staff would review them and make a recommendation of what mix of people to hire into those four positions. We might hire two in one of those titles and one in each of the others, or conceivably group them in some other way, depending on the applicants, the high-quality applicants who come in. So the recommendation from the staff to the Personnel Committee, and the Personnel Committee was agreement with this is for the staff to go ahead right away and advertise those positions. It would be advertised on the council website almost immediately and distributed to listservs that the staff is aware of and anyone else would like to suggest, and also advertised in some major newspapers that are to get as many resumes, quality resumes as we could, as quickly as we could, and recognizing that given the nature of public notice and the hiring process, it'll be probably 6 to 8 weeks before we're able to complete this process of hiring.
I'd like to move that we follow the committee's recommendation.
I think we formally have to move that, but let's do it. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Along those same lines, could I at least personally, and if the council is in agreement,
can I hear you?
I'd like to personally indicate. communicate my appreciation of the DEP's and the governor's office on behalf of the council in terms of letting us hire these six folks during what is otherwise a relatively strict hiring freeze. I'm appreciative. I hope the council is, and us keep on the record if everybody's in agreement, indicating that appreciation.
We can communicate that to them, but I know the DEP has a whole lot of priorities that they need, and this was one they put at the top of their list, so it's helpful. The Plan Development Committee met today, and as I think has been clear from the outset of the council's work, the statutory requirement that we adopt a plan within 18 months was a major challenge. And I know it's my experience, and I assume many members, is that most of the people in the public who've talked to me from the very beginning have said, how are you possibly going to prepare a plan in 18 months? And I have various answers that we'll do the first half in 9 months, the second half in 9 months. But I think it's become clear in recent weeks and many months that we're not going to meet that goal. That the council's, the statutory requirements that we prepare a comprehensive plan at a level of detail that, as Steve and Chris said earlier, has really never been done before. The statutory requirement or goal that we do that in 18 months was just not something that I think was possible to do, particularly given both the statutory requirement and the council's commitment to prepare that plan based on good science, so a collection of a lot of new data and analysis of that data, and to do it in a way that is as publicly accessible as possible with a lot of public input and a lot of opportunity for public review. So where we've gotten to is we are now 2 months, 2.5 months before that deadline, and what would be 18 months from our first meeting, which would have been mid-June, and realize we're not going to be able to adopt the plan that meets the standards we've set and the standards the law has set at the time. Staff has prepared a very detailed plan to get us from here to there of building from what Steve and Chris just presented of where we are now and what is needed in terms of data collection, data analysis, public review, policy development to get us to completing, to proposing a plan and completing it, which would have us the plan by the end of the year, which would be 6 months later than 18 months. And the Plan Development Committee went over this afternoon and recommends the schedule to full council. But I'd like to ask Dante and other appropriate staff to present it in more detail. One of the places this puts us where we haven't been before, as you see, is it puts us with a very detailed schedule of where we will know going forward whether we're on schedule. I would stress that while we're not meeting the original deadline and we're proposing an extension of 6 months, we're still facing a challenging schedule. Still the amount of data we have, the amount of work we need to do, the number of decisions we need to make, and the level of plan we need to develop is challenging to do even within the expanded timetable that we're about to discuss. The staff's belief is that it is doable, and that if all goes well, it is doable. And it's certainly worthy of discussion and endorsement. So,
Thank you. The staff has been working incredibly hard over the past 4 weeks to do exactly what the chairman has described, which is to do a very detailed inventory of exactly where we stand on each of the myriad aspects of plan development, then come up with a workable, sound plan for how we move forward to get the best plan possible, the plan that we're required to do under the Act. And you can get a sense of the complexity of what the plan is like from the presentation that Steve and Chris just gave, or by looking around the room and just seeing some of the maps that, you know, are data layers that were presented at the tax charrette. It's as the chairman's indicated, an incredibly complex and cutting-edge plan that's called for in the Act, and this council from the beginning has taken a very sound approach of making sure that this plan is going to be based on science. And so the general contours of the rollout that we'd recommend for the plan would be as follows. It would start with a public release of the data that we've generated over the past year in June. And that data, which has been and will be coming out of the respective committees, would be presented in a public event so that the members of the public can get an opportunity to see the data layers that they've been calling to see. And those layers would include not only the parcel data that we have, but information about water availability. It would include forests, habitat, transportation networks, infrastructure, probably a dozen or two dozen of the best data that's ever been assembled for the Highlands region we will have ready to show folks. We've had municipalities that have come forward and told us they believe they've got data, they know their regions. Counties have told us they have GIS data in certain cases, which they believe is accurate and can be helpful to us. Members of the public want to see what the data is. They want to know that we have good and accurate data before we start putting it together, integrating it into our land use capacity map. And so our approach is going to deliver those to the public and give them the chance to see that up front. In a way, it's expanding the comment period or the opportunity for comment beyond what was contemplated in the statute. The statute itself calls for 6 public hearings to take place throughout the Highlands region. We will be doing that, but we want to make sure that we don't just drop a plan, an integrated map on everybody before folks have had a chance to look at the data. And so by doing it up front in June, what we will do is to give everyone a chance to see the data layers. What will happen from there is during the summer, staff will continue to look at the input that we get, to work on the technical reports, to make sure that the data is accurate and can be integrated in an effective way so that when the summer's over, in late September or early October, we'll have an integrated map and standards for folks to look at a second time. At that point, we'll have an opportunity for the mandated public hearings and go through that process for the fall, which incidentally is a good time, folks tell us, for getting their chance to come to a public hearing and give comments as folks are away during the summer. And then we would be in a position not only to have used careful deliberation in assembling the plan and including the public input, but we'd still be able to, we hope, adopt the final portion of the plan at the end of the calendar year. And in coming up with this recommendation, staff was mindful of a number of very important concepts. The primary one was that the essential requirement in the Act is to protect natural resources. We're mandated to start from an analysis of all of those data layers and from there determine what kind of solid regional planning ought to happen. It's also based on the fact that public input is extremely important. The Act requires quote-unquote maximum public input, and that's something that we've seen the Council do from the beginning when it was created, and that is to have a transparent process, like at these meetings, to post information on websites, provide agendas, show the data up front. And as we see it, this process will better allow the public to have that release of data. Another important concept is that the Act itself does not provide for a legal sanction for the timing of adoption of the Regional Master Plan. It says that we must do a resource capacity analysis first. It says we must follow sound science. And it says that we must have maximum public input. And we're mindful that those, all of those concepts are extremely significant. And as stakeholders have told us, and members of the public have told us when they come to meetings, they want us to get this right. They realize that this plan is a plan that's going to have an effect on real people. And real people want to know what the effect's going to be, and they want to know that we've done it in the best scientifically based manner possible. And we feel this rollout can do that. It can provide the information up front. It can provide for the public input. And in the end, it will give us a plan that's based on sound science, that's legally defensible, that's defensible as a matter of fairness. So we'd like to encourage the council to approve this process. We'd also like the council to approve one other aspect, which is staff would like to make sure that as we go forward with doing a solid plan, at the same time we take some immediate steps to address some of the concerns over land equity. And in that regard, we've heard concerns from landowners from the beginning of the process. The council has always been very mindful that concerns of land equity, land preservation, are of paramount importance. As we roll out the plans, we begin to roll it out, we'd like to make sure that there will be, if possible, a specific source of funding for acquisition. That's both open space acquisition and farmland acquisition. We'd like to make sure that the process that folks follow if they want to put in applications is a process that's expeditious, and that we'd like to get the dollars for that acquisition to the landowners as quickly as possible. And we've reached out to both the Secretary of Agriculture and the DP Commissioner, who are both very supportive of exploring that process with us. And so if we can come up with dollars, if we can expedite a process, if we can show folks how this can work, we feel that we will make sure that we're honoring the notion of protecting land equity. And there are other aspects that we can pursue as well, including exploring whether TDR can help in this, or at least initial exploration of TDR, because we want to make sure that land equity concerns are still in the foremost of our mind as we move forward. So that's sum and substance, Mr. Chairman, of the staff proposal.
And in all our packets is this document, which has the detailed schedule, which staff has a slightly larger print version, which rolls out to, what, 9 feet long?
Right.
So specific questions on this, or more general questions?
I have some sort of general comments and questions. The observation that we're not going to get the regional master plan done in accordance with the legislative mandate doesn't come as a shock to me. But I think it's fair to say that officially, until today, we've been told, in respect to the previous executive director, that we were on track to get it done. Just as a matter of sort of record, I'm right in thinking that, am I not?
You are right. The Plan Development Committee has discussed it for the last couple of meetings that it looked like we weren't going to get it done.
So I think it's fair to say that so that the public knows that this is a new or newish recognition of things. What Dante has said sounds sensible to me, but I am reflective, or I do reflect on the fact that we have a legislative mandate. Do we, or Mr. Chairman, do you, or Mr. Chief Counsel, do you have a suggestion for us in terms of interacting with the legislature on this issue, or for some set of reasons is that, you know, not significant because this is the way things always happen? I'm new to this, and in the abstract, I would think that we ought to, you know, write a letter to the legislature and the governor and say, this is our view of things, and we would like you to bless it in some fashion, but we shouldn't be here, and I know you were speaking colloquially, we shouldn't be here saying this is the new schedule. I mean, right now the schedule is the legislature's, I think, but I'm happy to have some learning on that.
Well, we have, Dante and I have communicated with both the DP commissioner and the governor's office to let them know that we were presenting this schedule to the council today. I think you're right. My sense is that we should communicate to the legislature if the council approves the schedule to say that this is what we're doing and why. I don't think we need a legislative amendment or any kind of approval to do it.
There are some conflicting provisions in the legislature and in the act itself that the council must adhere to. In addition to the deadline of 18 months after the first meeting, and we're in the process of fulfilling some of those other conflicts. Am I right, Tom? Maybe you better speak to this.
Yeah, indeed. Let me just give a little maybe historical context. This isn't the first time a state agency or sub-entity like this has missed a statutory deadline. In fact, many state agencies have been many, many years late. I don't think a six-month delay is beyond the realm of historical, at least, tardiness. But in terms of the specific issue in terms of the Act, Jack is indeed correct that the Act actually has conflicting mandates to adopt a regional master plan within 18 months of the first meeting. But it goes on to say that the council should not adopt a regional master plan unless it has completed a capacity analysis. In other words, this is a capacity-based plan. To the extent the capacity analysis is ongoing, we have a conflicting mandate. So I think the legislature wanted to make sure that the plan that was adopted was scientifically robust and the capacity analysis in terms of water, wastewater capacity to grow had been completed before the plan was adopted.
And just so, Mr. Salaberry, you're aware, we did brief the governor's office on the proposal in advance, and I did have a chance to speak to Senator Smith, the prime sponsor, to let him know also that the committee and council would be taking this matter up. But we can certainly follow up to find out if contacting some of the other sponsors or in other ways addressing something to the legislature would be helpful. I'm sure Senator Smith would be helpful in recommending a course of action.
Yeah, no, that all of that sounds sensible to me. I think writing a letter, that it need not be long in indicating what we're doing and making sure that it in effect is going to all of the members of the legislature would be a prudent and appropriate thing to do.
I agree. We should do that. Because I don't think any of us take lightly the fact that we're missing this deadline. We have a motion to this, and I also want to get public comment on this question.
I guess the one other thought, or at least one other thought, comes to mind. Dante did talk about two things, I thought, and maybe we should take them up separately, ultimately. There was a land equity question that seemed to me separate and apart from just the time question.
You do that separately. So is there a motion to adopt the proposed revised schedule?
I'll make that motion.
I will second it.
Are there public comments on this schedule, please?
Good afternoon, Steve Shaw, special counsel for Warren 100 County. I would respectfully disagree with the advice that you've received from council as to whether there is a need to amend this legislation. The Highlands Council is a creature of statute and is obligated to conform its activities in accordance with that statute. The fact that you have conflicting mandates in terms of your responsibility does not provide an excuse for you to not comply with the statutory requirements. Given your memorandum as to the projected activity and time period, I would suggest that it's incumbent upon the council to adopt a motion requesting the legislature to amend the statute to enable you to perform the other functions that you have. I would suggest that to do otherwise is to act in an ultra-virus manner, and the actions you take can be voidable. That is a consequence of taking action if the legislation is not amended. Thank you.
My name is David Chope. I live in Long Valley. I've been held in limbo by this act for at least 2 years, probably 30 months. I think that's long enough. It's time for you to put something on the table so some of us can sue you.
Jerry Kern, Powhatan Township. I have 70 acres in a preservation area. I also disagree with this. It's sticking us further in limbo. It's another perfect example of the crap that this act is. You're delaying this because you don't have the science. You just admitted it. all this science and all this other stuff should have been done long before this act was ever passed. Another screw up in the legislation. So I just think it's all crap, like I've been telling you. And eventually, maybe you people will see what you've done to us. And now you're going to keep it going. That's real smart. You people have to be accountable for what's going on here. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Wilma Fry from the New Jersey Conservation Foundation, and I just wanted to say that I think that this is the idea of having a longer time to work on the plan is is a very excellent idea. I think that it's an enormous job you have, and the fact that you're going to be getting a much better sustainability analysis and that the facts on which this are based are, you know, it's just going to be much better thought out, and I'm very appreciative that you have the courage to say that we, you know, that it cannot be done by the time that was happened to be in the act, and that these other aspects of that are mandated by the legislation, such as having the sustainability analysis done, are more important than a simple time deadline. Thank you very much.
Deborah Post, I think if you go back and read the Kelo decision, you will find that a reasonable plan was supposed to have preceded the actual legislative act. The legislation itself was to have been based on a reasonable plan that could be probably implemented with public benefit. You didn't have a plan before the legislation was passed. And it's 2 years later, and you still don't have a plan. And there are a lot of people's lives that are being very seriously affected by this. I think you need to get a plan out. Pronto.
Nancy Palladino, Hunterdon County Freeholder Director. I'd like to know what we can expect. Already, it's close to a year that the cross-acceptance process, the negotiation process between the state and the county, it's almost a year in July that we should have been negotiating. I'm concerned about what this delay will mean in terms of that process.
Cross-acceptance with the State Planning Office?
Yes, last July we were supposed to meet. And the latest deadline we were given was February, which of course has come and gone, and I very much suspect, in fact, I know, that this will hold that up further. I'm concerned about that. I'm also concerned about the plan endorsement process. There are towns that are going through the IPE at this moment, and I'm concerned that their petitions will be held up, I would think most certainly in the preservation area, probably in the planning area, and possibly in areas outside of the two areas. I'm concerned about that, and I think we need some direction. The next thing is I'm concerned because we have asked for an extension of the pre-act values. They go to 2009. Right now, without further delay, you're talking about at least 2007. I remain very concerned about the amount of funding available, and I really don't see it in the budget that provisions are being made adequately to start preserving properties and ensuring that these landowners have their equity at the time at which this regional master plan becomes law. I remain very concerned about that. And not to be hypocritical or critical of the situation, but I do find it ironic that there was plenty of justification to pass through a law of this magnitude, and now we're hearing after a year and a half we still need more information. I should think a lot of this legwork would have been done before the law was created, as municipalities do. They look at their sustainability, they hire hydrogeologists, they look at a wide range of information before they enact laws that affect people. Thank you.
Andy Drysdale, 32 East Fox Chase Road, Chester, New Jersey, in the preservation area. I was disappointed last night when the slide, a slide that had been shown previously on a TDR presentation was shown again. The slide showed numerous buildings.
Mr. Garza, are you speaking to the resolution that's on the floor right now?
All right, I'll speak to that. Please, everyone in this room and everywhere, this stupid act has been overturned, should be overturned, has to be overturned. There are, as we saw last night, several voluntary programs already in place. These programs should be made less restrictive, less increasing incentive. A totally voluntary TDR program without other restrictions would probably go a long way in accomplishing conservation. Please call or write or email the legislators and government officials who make the laws and explain to them and encourage them to make these important changes. The New Jersey Legislature website, http://www.njus/lists, all the legislatures, their mailing addresses and telephone numbers. Click on legislative roster. You know, you can find that website just by typing in New Jersey Legislature on on any search engine. I hope everybody does that. This thing needs to be overturned.
Susan Buck, Oxford. I probably don't have a whole lot new to say. I've been very big agreement with most of what's been said. We've been waiting 2 years in a preservation area for sure. Our lives are on hold. The planning area has begun to be on hold. They realized what the imminent changes were going to be. I think they're going to be coming to a grinding halt in terms of their planning, the people that own property there, the marketability of anything, the economic growth in the area. I think it's all going to come to a standstill. That is, it's difficult, and at the same time, I support taking our time and doing a scientific plan, but I think if we're going to finally come out and be public about that, we need to go back to the legislation, and we need your support to get it modified. By now knowing how much the plan is going to be delayed, it affects so many pieces of the legislation that need to go back and be fixed. And a lot of what Nancy's saying is exactly the first few things that came to my mind as well. There's equity issues. There's funding issues. I could go on and on. I can't do it on 2 minutes, but I really think it is important to go back and take a look at the legislation, get it modified to accept this extra deadline, give people an idea of what they can expect. It's just not just the property owners. It's everybody that runs towns, that runs businesses in these areas. We're going to be affected. We have the right to know. We shouldn't have rushed it through to begin with. We're paying the price for McGreevy's folly as we speak. And we should come clean, say what it's going to take. If it's going to take more than 6 months, I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with that. We'd love to see it get done right. Get rid of the line. Forget about being the blind to the line. Get rid of the line. Whatever we have to do in the legislation, I don't know, you put a moratorium, whatever it takes, I don't know. But get rid of that whole thing, all these things that have caused all these problems all along, and give people a realistic idea of what they can really expect and when.
Yeah, my name's Hank Klopp. I'm a farmer in Tewksbury. You know, I'm a nuts and bolts guy. And when I see this happening, you know, like if I didn't pay my mortgage for 6 months, by golly, somebody would be after me. And like Sue Buck said, dear, I'd like to have you go back to the legislators and tell them there's problems with it. Not only that, the most biggest problem is funding. And also, on all these policies that you brought up here, every one of those need money. So it's an opportunity to go back to the legislators and say there is a problem with the whole thing. I'd like to see it scrapped, but that's, and again, draw the lines where they should be, not political lines, but put them where they should be. I think, I mean, I'm only one person, but, you know, it's wrong. I mean, it's been over 2 years. I mean, since this thing's happened. So that's about ketchup.
I wouldn't want to speak.
Wait, I'm sorry. I was a woman behind you.
My name is Nancy Chumbell, and I'm with the Warren County Environmental Commission. And I first would like to thank the staff for acknowledging the comments that our commission submitted to you in regard to the development of the regional master plan. Things that were specific to Warren County that were overlooked because of our uniqueness, and I was very pleased to see three of the elements incorporated in this plan today that were not in its original draft form. I also commend the council for their dedication to substance rather than arbitrary deadlines. That has been our greatest concern, that you could meet your deadlines and not meet the needs of the individual people of Warren County. And obviously, the testimony that you hear every month for the past year or so shows of what a variety and what a vastness there is. So I do commend you for your attention to try to balance all of that and come up with something that's reasonable for the public good. And I appreciate it, and I'm very happy with what I've seen before me today.
On this resolution.
Hi. My name is Reza Hashemi. We own a piece of property on Route 206 in Flanders, and it's 28 acres, and we've been paying taxes for the last 2 years. I mean, every year we've been paying like $30,000 a year, and it's been pretty difficult to pay the taxes. So, you know, we were hoping that, you know, for the last 2 years you come up with some kind of conclusion here, which you're asking for another extension. So I respectfully propose that you come up with some kind of compromise with the landowners, at least reimburse them part of their costs, maybe pay their property taxes, or come up with some means so, you know, it won't be as difficult for us. I appreciate your thoughts on this. Thank you.
The comments I will make are from Mansfield Township, and it speaks obliquely to the delay of the plan. So I don't know. Oh, you have another comment period?
We will. Yes, we are.
Then I'll wait.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Other comments?
Could I just clarify one thing with Dante? Dante, you talked about the summer being the summer, and it would be useful to get comments post the summer. I want to make sure that we're not delaying this over the summer for that reason, and that was just an added observation that it's the requirement of gathering information and analyzing it and putting it together in a plan that takes us all the way out to the fall.
You're correct, the latter description.
Yeah, I'm a little troubled in that I've consistently felt that it's the legislature's job to pass laws, and our job is to take the law that they passed and implement it the way that they designed it, good or bad. So here we are now proposing that we have the authority to ignore a deadline that the legislature established. For whatever reason they had, they established that deadline. We could disagree with it, but that was what they put in the law. So if we have the authority to ignore the deadline, then why don't we have the authority to ignore impervious coverage set at 3%? Or why don't we have the authority to... So I think that in my position is that I'm not suggesting that we can develop the right plan by June 1st, but I think the legislature has to give us permission to not develop it by June 1st, and we need to seek that permission. And I would not be in favor of taking the action without the legislature's approval and amendment of the act. I'm very uncomfortable with that. I'll say something more. I mean, we can come up with, I think we can develop a plan by June 1st if we really wanted to. I was part of the Natural Resources Committee and watched the DEP come up with emergency rules to meet the statutory deadline established by the act and then come up with the science to justify it 6 months later. You know, so if we really need to make a plan, we can make a plan and come up with the science later on to support whatever we want.
On the latter point, I mean, the DEP was in the unusual position at that point of not having a requirement for public comment on those regulations, which we would have. Tom could speak about this more, but there is precedent for this, that other agencies, the Department of Environmental Protection among them, have had statutory deadlines for plans of similar to this, and to some extent, and they have missed those deadlines. What has happened in each of those cases is the administrative agency, in that case, Department of Environmental Protection, has gone ahead and finished the plan when they could, and as soon as they could. And there was no legislation required, and that has been what's happened. I think Michael Salvera's suggestion that we inform the legislature of what we're doing makes perfect sense, and we should do that. The legislature would have the option to amend the act if they wanted to, but realistically, the legislature is not going to amend this act between now and June 16th, which would be our 18 months.
Well, they could.
They could.
They can very easily introduce and pass, and the governor can sign a law that extends the deadline for the regional master plan. And for me to be in favor of changing the timelines, that would be the motion that I would have to see passed. I just will not, because the DEP didn't meet a deadline, is not reason enough for me to not meet a deadline in my job. And I will not support changing the time frames without the legislature approving it.
Yes. Understanding and recognizing the huge scope of this particular project that we've undertaken, and I'm new here, and I don't know if anyone in this room can answer this question, but does anyone know the rationale used by the legislature to set that 18-month deadline?
I asked Dante the same question in the committee meeting, and Dante will give you the same answer that I gave
realize that your question is truly asking for the intention of all of the legislators who passed it. So you have to recognize legislation, first of all, is an exercise in group thought, in group action. But in generalities, it's fair to say that some of the things that were motivating legislators at the time went in different directions. One was to protect one of the most important, pristine areas of the state. But how to do that? One way to do it would be to initiate immediate enhanced environmental standards. Another way would be to have a plan done that's very thorough. On the other side, it would be great if that plan could be done as expeditiously as possible. Initially when legislators talked about it, they initially were talking about just 12 months to do a plan. And folks at the time in discussing it said, well, there's absolutely no way to do that. And so in my recollection, it's fair to say that the legislators thinking about it said, well, clearly we should give more time, but if we don't want to give them 5 years because, like in CAFRA, they were given, 4 or 5 years to do a plan, and that took longer. In my view, the thought was keep it fairly aggressive. Don't put any kicker in. There's no sanction that follows it. So realize it may not be exactly that, but we want it to be thorough. We're giving very explicit requirements of what shall be in the plan, and it shall be as quickly as they can do it. And it's not as if we could meet all of the requirements of the components that must be in the plan and just do something by June. So one of the things staff has to balance is we're trying to do a plan that has all the elements that they have, but also trying to do the deadline. What do you do if that's not possible? So it's not a matter of ignoring what the legislature would like to happen. It's a matter of how best to accommodate their intention. And in our view, the best way to do that would not be to leave out essential components that they've dictated be in the plan. It would be better to do it the right way and try to do it as quickly as possible. So that's how the staff is oriented. To do something now and leave out pieces, or to just put something out without public input, wouldn't result in achieving the spirit of the legislation, in my view. So that's my best historical explanation.
Thank you. Could I make a comment to him? You know, one of the things that maybe hadn't been anticipated in the legislation was the fact that this, it was not an established body that was going to put this plan together. It's not like the DEB. And maybe nobody had estimated the time that it was going to take to find a place to be, to furnish it, to hire staff, all of those things, which, you know, has absorbed a lot of time before we really had a group of people ready to start running to put this plan together. I mean, us as council members, we're all dedicated, but I certainly am not a scientist, and none of us could do this work. So that I think that we have to take that into consideration, that there was time that was absorbed just with normal organization startup activities.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, just on a couple of points that were raised. I think, as Dante said, it's always tricky in the absence of very explicit language in the statement in the statute to understand what the legislature's motivation was. I would argue that my recollection of the debate was that the legislature was very interested in making sure that the protections got into place, that the limitations on development that might come out of this plan that are embodied in DEP regulations were in place very quickly. And so I do think they were trying to motivate us to be as ambitious as possible. And I think we've been that. I think people would be, if they were honest, hard-pressed to criticize this council for not working hard and not working transparently. I guess I would further argue that, you know, Mr. Alstead's suggestion that we could simply write up a plan and make up the science later is absolutely contrary to the spirit that this council has operated in, and contrary to the criticism that we've heard. You know, we've been accused of having preset agendas and having conclusions already made up in our mind. And I think that, you know, the evidence that's on the wall here shows that we are trying to go through a deliberative process. The freeholder from Hunterdon County was wrong in saying that this type of analysis gets done all the time. It does not. And I think the evidence is out there, and the failure of towns to do this kind of work in the past is what led to this act in and of itself. So I think that, you know, being asked to choose between conflicting mandates with the hope that that might somehow undermine the efforts to move forward on this, I think is inappropriate. I think the council is being very responsible in choosing to try to implement, try to follow the more substantive mandates of doing the science, of involving the public, so that we can make some informed decisions on how to protect this region. Lastly, what I would say, I raised the question with Dante in the earlier meeting about what types of the protections might be at risk by the extension of time that we're going to take on this. And I think, you know, he said to me the same ones that many of the members of the audience that objected to this proposal did, that it's going to affect the dollars. Well, there are no dollars in the Act. We've recognized that. We've advocated for new and additional sources of funding. You know, as Mr. Pierre said, he has gone to the Commissioner of DEP and the Secretary of Agriculture to make sure that dollars in the short term are focused to deal with the legitimate conservation opportunities that are out there. And then secondly, I don't think you mentioned, Dante, that you're also trying to accelerate the identification of TDR opportunities, again, trying to find ways to bring money back. So we are trying to act responsibly here, I think. We are not simply drawing lines on the map and trying to justify it later. We're trying to do right by the people of this region and still meet the mandates in reaction to the very real pressures that these resources are facing.
I think Mr. Alstead was being a bit facetious.
Thank you for that clarification.
There was a twinkle in his voice.
That's all I was. I just want to make another comment to all the council members. You know, in your packet today, you will find a Gantt chart that is guiding the staff in the development of the plan. And if you look at the plan for the plan, there are some over 680 tasks that are identified as having to be accomplished in order to guarantee that this is a viable, scientifically valid plan when we release it. This is an incredible, just putting the plan together was an incredible task. And I think that it shows how detailed they're trying to be and what a terrific plan this will be when it's done.
Thank you.
but y'all ought to review that sometime. 10 pages of it.
I was thinking on this issue, and I've been on both sides of it. Unlike Kirk, in my private life, when I'm awarded a project, you create the schedule at the beginning, and then very rarely, if ever, are you granted an extension. It's certainly not expected. But I've also been in the on the municipal side of government, and knowing that there are stopgap ways whenever you're faced with a pressure such as enacting and embracing a master plan, that there are things you can do to meet criteria. You can create a report, you can have a bunch of pages left blank intentionally, you've put it out there, you've met the mandate, you've put it out for public comment, and of course, you know, you're not going to get good public comment back, but you know, you can meet what's expected of you by the law. When I consider this, though, I think what we really need to realize is that at the end of the year, in December, whichever way we do it, we're going to be at the same place. So I think that really what's rational here is to do the way the schedule allows for, to not take any stopgap measures, and just to do the reasonable thing and work forward on this. So that's the way I really feel we should do it.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of things. The only thing I'd like to say is, obviously, to do this right, we need more time. As much as in my heart of hearts, if we're going to maintain and be a credible agency, I think we need to move as expeditiously as possible to give the affected property owners some comfort that we are moving in the direction to best represent them. And as Dante said, along with the extension to the legislature, it's important that we impose or we let them realize to know that the dedicated funding source is paramount to the success of this. And I think it's now's the time more than ever to impose on the legislature and to the governor. I think we've been through this exercise long enough now to see that every turn that we make, we realize the funding issue pops up. And with all due respect to the governor, I know he has a very heavy task at hand with his budget and all, but I remember one thing he said in a couple of his initiatives in his latest budget address, that some of those initiatives were for people without a voice. Well, I think the people within this Highlands region also fit that same bill, people without a voice. So if it means week after week sending the leadership in the legislature a letter, whatever the case may be, to impose on them that if this is going to work, funding issue for the equity of their property is paramount. And I know it's going to be a cost, but if the region is that important to the entire state of New Jersey, you have to pay, and there's a price that comes with everything. So I'm eager to support the extension of the 6 months to do this right, but let's not forget about the rest of these people in northwest New Jersey without a voice.
I just wanted to say, I think one of the underestimated tasks that we had to face and the staff had to face was the lack of compatible data. And I think anyone who's ever looked at permit applications for the Highlands or has been through a review process at the DEP level for a water allocation permit, for instance, or a discharge permit, anywhere in the state, you realize there's a real lack of data, especially in terms of capacity, in terms of the assimilative capacity of the receiving streams, in terms of how much water is there, and whether or not we've over-allocated. And there have been, because of the lack of data, a lot of measuring sticks that have been invented by DEP, and they've used them as fairly as they could, I'm sure. I've disagreed in many instances with them myself, but those measuring sticks are not good enough for this plan. And we had to go back, and the staff had to go back and dig into existing data and in some instances, compile data that never had been compiled before, and that process is ongoing. And I think the legislature, nobody in the state really realized how data poor we are in the decisions that we make, the environmental decisions that we make every day in this state. So we took on a task that probably is going to now surpass any other depth of analysis
that in these environmental decisions that are made every day in New Jersey in other places. So I think, you know, we have to recognize that, and it's not necessarily a criticism of the state. It's a big state. It's a lot of resources, and it's a lot of people to serve and critters to take care of in streams. And I think, though, we have to recognize that the depth of the work that has been done is really the reason, and the rigor that's being put into this plan is really the reason for the extension, not lack of work or poor planning on the part of the staff here. So I wholeheartedly support the extension. The goal is to get a good plan, and one that works and is based on scientific data, and I think we have to get the extension in order to get there. I thank the staff for its excellent work.
The only one that hasn't commented, so I have to say something to support what my colleagues are saying. And thoughts occurred to me in the plan development meeting. The reason for this extension is because the council very early on set very high standards for two things. One is that the plan would be based on very robust scientific analysis, which we've discussed to a large degree. But also, we set a very high standard for the amount of public input that we were going to take in preparing this plan. We could have had a plan done by June if we had, I think, significantly lowered those standards of both quality of the plan and also the amount of input. And I think at the end of the day, this is going to be an effort that has far-reaching implications for the public, and we are better serving the public interest by doing this right. I feel very comfortable with that. The other point is, as we went through in great detail in our plan development meeting, Steve's literally 9-foot Gantt chart of the 680 points, it occurred to me that when all said and done, by December of this year, we're going to be at the same place we would have been at before. The original plan called for dumping all of the data as well as the plan in June, looking at all the implications of it and the public comment we would have received, and I think the revisions we would have made, as opposed to now where we'll be rolling out the data layers and we'll be getting comments along the way. I seriously don't think we're going to end up with a delay from this. I think we're going to be at the same point, so just wanted to make that.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, if somebody takes a 55-gallon drum of ethylene glycol, antifreeze, and dumps it into the Jersey City reservoir in Parsippany, and they get caught, they're going to get prosecuted. And they're going to get prosecuted because they're breaking the law. And I learned a long time in Sunday school, a long time ago, that, you know, all sin is equal in God's eye. And whether somebody breaks the law a lot or somebody breaks the law a little, they're still breaking the law. I'm not opposed to the changing of the time frame, but I am opposed to the method that we're proposing. And I'd like to suggest that we amend the motion that's on the floor, and that rather than informing the legislature and the governor of our intentions, we ask them to propose and pass legislation and tell them why we need it to grant us 6 more months to do the work. I'm very troubled by us assuming that we have the authority to break the law.
But, Kurt, we don't have the authority to direct the legislature to do that. What if they wouldn't take that action? Where would we be? We'd be at the same point we're at today.
But we haven't tried. So it's time for us to try.
What if they said no? What would we do?
Then I think that it's incumbent upon us to come up with something by June 1st.
Could throw the bill out.
Well, you're proposing an amendment to the motion. Is there a second to Kurt's amendment? Well, the resolution is that we adopt the schedule that's before us that would have us complete the plan in December. Implicit in the resolution is that we would notify the governor and the legislature of this action in a letter. In a letter, they would explain the reasons and our plan going forward. Are you ready to vote?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make an amendment to the motion to make that implicit suggestion explicit.
Okay.
Put that as part of the resolution if council will amend the resolution to reflect that.
You made the motion, so I assume you accept that.
I'll second.
Okay. All right. So that is the motion. Any questions on the motion? Any other comments? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Abstentions?
Can I just ask a question who our point person would be in that contact? I'm always concerned with the legal aspects of this, and I really look to Tom to make sure that we're really within our authority. So I'd like to know that whatever his equal in the legislature is, that they're talking from a legal aspect. I know Dante would be there, and it'd be very conversant, and I'm sure the same would be accomplished, but I'd just like to always hear back from Tom that we're within our means. Is that
we
sound reasonable?
We can ensure that we get confirmation of the process.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the resolution regarding grants to municipalities.
Could I make a comment on that? We had this landowners forum last night. We really haven't had a chance to talk, the members of the Land Preservation Subcommittee, but I was aware of this initiative, this land equity initiative, and I wanted to suggest that we convene a meeting of the Land Preservation Committee soon. I know Glenn has had an interest in this, and I think certainly if you're able to try and work around your schedule for you to attend, as well as any council member, and I think it's time to map out a plan incorporating those elements, plus the realities of where we are with regard to the water fee, and prepare a recommendation to the council for what we will advocate to the legislature and to the governor's office. And I'm not sure how
I'll second that.
That's where I was looking for us to be going, and I think that's where Michael's thinking. So.
Well, I think what Dante said at the beginning was that at the same time as approving the extension, we would undertake an initiative to try to move forward on land equity, providing some land equity in these next months.
Funding source, right. Also,
and we could work on the development through Debbie's committee. I think that would be entirely.
So your suggestion is basically that we not have a resolution now, but we come back at the next meeting.
We can agree in consensus that we're all in, or if there's a consensus that we support that initiative and that we're going to work on something specific.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make a comment. You know, equity is one of the big issues that we have to deal with. And if we're going to go to the legislature and tell them that, you know, we would like them to address this, if I were a legislator, I would say, well, how much do you need? And where did you get those estimates? So it seems to me that at some point in time, we're going to have to take a shot at estimating how much land has to be preserved and the value of it. Or else we're just saying, give us some money.
Mr. Chairman, if I could clarify what my proposal would be so you could see what the members would like to do. I actually was thinking of these separately. As I hear it, there are two different potential proposals. The one I was making was an immediate proposal, which was the same time we roll out the plan that we focus all existing monies, if I could call it that, or existingly available monies through agencies for this purpose to get those dollars to landowners as soon as possible. And I think there's a significant benefit in tying that with the rollout, the beginning of the rollout of our plan. I would suggest that the other matter is a longer-term mission, which could include, you know, water fee, it could be renewing the Garden State Preservation Trust, it could be other measures that could come up with funds. And those, I am in full concurrence, we as staff should help the members do, but I wouldn't want the first task to be delayed because we're thinking about the longer task.
I think we're going to fairly quickly, the Land Preservation Subcommittee, sign on to that initiative, which is basically, if I understand it, there'll be some earmarking of funds and a system for expediting land preservation. Does that hit the essence of it?
And those are a number of you.
I think we're all going to be in agreement on supporting that, so I won't see us holding it back.
So you're recommending we not have a resolution right now on that topic? Okay. Right. So we do have a resolution regarding one grant.
But I guess, is it the sense of folks that we are sending it today to the Land Conservation Committee? So when folks, you know, especially the press, ask what we've done, we've clearly passed a resolution, and we've also undertaken the action of sending this important matter to the appropriate committee.
Right. Yes. Okay. We don't need a resolution to do that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. So we do have a resolution for one local grant.
Yes. Steve's going to present on that.
There's a resolution for your consideration of award for a co-op planning grant in the amount of $7,500 to the Township of Cohackon Funding assistance through the Collins Council grant program to municipalities includes cost sharing for municipalities to prepare their third round obligation plans for submission to COA in the amount of $7,500 for those that have substantive certification. That grant program is still open. There are periodic municipalities that haven't taken advantage of it that continue to apply, and we applaud the Township of Hackon for taking advantage of it, and the staff's recommendation to the Council is to approve the resolution awarding a grant in the amount of $7,500.
I'll move that resolution as distributed.
For a second.
Second.
Any discussion? Any public comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Is there any other matters before we have a public comment period? What's the next item on the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to need to excuse myself.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for coming. For anyone who hasn't been here before, we welcome your comments. We ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes, and we do not engage in question and answer session here, but if you have questions, members of the council or members of the staff will get back to you and try to answer them either after the meeting or at another time. Yes?
Good afternoon. My name is Nikki Goger. I work for New Jersey Farm Bureau. I have a letter here that I'd like to read from President Richard Neuenhaus, President of Farm Bureau, regarding your agricultural grant program that you've been considering. New Jersey Farm Bureau would like to thank the Highlands Council for its consideration of investing in integrated pest management and its ongoing commitment to supporting the agricultural industry in the Highlands. We are aware that the Natural Resources Committee is researching the idea of a grant program for agriculture, including IPM, direct marketing, and assistance to county agricultural development boards. We offer our support of these programs and our appreciation of your efforts on the viability of farming. The Integrated Pest Management Program at Rutgers College is an important part of many New Jersey farm operations, especially in the northern part of the state. There are many New Jersey fruit growers in the Highlands region, and they utilize this important program to make better decisions about pesticide use on their crops. Not only is IPM a money-saving program, it reduces environmental risks sometimes associated with conventional use of crop protection chemicals. The continuation of the IPM program in New Jersey, which is experiencing severe budget challenges, will help farmers remain competitive in the challenging agricultural industry. So, again, thank you.
Update on where we are with that program? We talk about this.
Honestly, I have not talked to Steve in terms of how much progress they've made in the development to give a report.
Maybe we could brief that next time.
Okay. Okay. Right. That would be a good thing to do. Comments?
My name is Howard Wolf. I'm with the Community Builders Association. Today, this council has agreed to postpone the adoption of a regional plan. Realistically, we are going to get the plan done as the legislature had intended, Chairman Weingart was quoted as saying. The builder community agrees with the reasons reported in the Star Ledger for postponing the plan. Certainly, a rushed plan can only weaken the implementation of the Highlands Act. A plan based upon real science and not political science would be welcome. The results of last year also magnify other difficulties. Not one landowner has been paid by the state for land made practically worthless in the open market, whereas the state is moving to re-examine its rules for eminent domain, where property owners are at least financially compensated. This council has done little more than be verbally sympathetic to Highlands property owners. Everyone in this room knows that there's no money to pay for the land that was made practically worthless by the Act. And all the committees that want to compensate people at a small amount of money doesn't make a difference. I think it's time for this council to tell people in this room we don't have money. We don't have the money, and we're not going to get it unless something else happens. You ought to stop kidding people that all these compensation for conservation is going to make, there's no money. Just let's admit it. There's no money, and we go from there. Action by this council should advocate changes in the Act instead of brushing aside an attempt by the local legislators to change the act, and lamenting lack of authority to compensate property owners, you should be urging and lobbying for revisions in the act. Your leadership has changed the mandated date for the master plan. Your leadership must also change the way the act protects property rights and provides housing for New Jersey's families. All must be in harmony for the others to work. Thank you.
Deborah Post. I attended yesterday's landowner forum. The room was filled with old people, lots of wrinkled faces and white hair. Our grandmothers and grandfathers ventured out last night with their canes and in their wheelchairs, lured by the slim hope of recouping a small fraction of their net worth stolen by the Highlands Act. The financial burden of this onerous law rests largely on the shoulders of the elderly. We listen to droning presentations about estate tax and income deductions for gifting our devalued land, all directed at an audience of hardworking people dressed largely in work clothes. This winter, I took the opportunity to stop by the Pitkin County, Colorado Development Office and had a chat with the manager. I have provided each of you with a marked-up copy of the Pitkin County TDR deed restriction document. Please note that the restrictions are contained in one sentence. This council would be well advised to adopt a similar, simple, and straightforward TDR deed restriction, as limited restrictions will mitigate many exaction and other legal actions charging overreaching. After all, the Highlands Act itself is restrictive beyond bearing. Why do you need to add more restrictions to it? Chester Township recent reevaluation of my property indicated that the fair market value of Block 33, Lot 4 is $200,000 an acre. Farmland preservation in Chester area is offering $35,000 an acre. Please note the $165,000 per acre discrepancy between the township's determination of fair market value and the prices offered by farmland preservation. Are we being told that the farmland remainder value of our land is $165,000? All studies indicate that the development value of land in New Jersey approaches 90% of its fair market value. In Chester, this would translate into a development value of approximately $150,000 an acre, not the $35,000 being offered by the conservation groups. This means that last night the conservation groups that spoke were offering to pay all those senior citizens about 20% of the value they deserve to receive. The marketing message encouraging landowners to apply for their 20 cents on the dollar before even that funding dries up is an unconscionable scare tactic and immoral. Mr. Scalavara, congratulations for once again being a savvy investor and subdividing your land before the Highlands' contagious disease spreads into Bernardsville. And I mean that sincerely. We both know that only a fool would continue to hold open land in New Jersey. The Highlands Act has only fueled the race to develop.
I just want to show you, I went to the TAC meeting, and this was up in the front of the room. And at the end of the TAC meeting, Steve can tell you, the group said, whichever you feel was most needed or whatever, put a star by it. And unbeknown to me, when I went up to get that at the end of the meeting, we had quite a few stars. So the sign does work. Don't count that as an
okay.
I need my glasses, too. Yeah, I'm done. All right. My name is Hank Klump. I'm a farmer in Hunterdon. My 150 acres have been put into Highlands Preservation. I attended a meeting where TDRs were discussed. It was a good meeting, but I was surprised to learn that the TDR representatives were uninformed and many of them unreasonable DEP restrictions being applied to land in the Highlands Preservation Area. It is a true mystery as to how TDRs will work out with such restrictions. The meeting was to be 2 hours and ending up lasting over 6 hours. Why? Because there were so many problems. The devastation to me and others just keeps growing. A CAC meeting was held July 2005. Many, many problems were brought out. Major problems that needed solution. Now, at a TAC meeting in March 2006, the same major problems are facing us, plus a dozen or so more. There was no solutions. The problems are still holding strong 8 months later. No progress at all. The pending theft of my farm's real estate value is still very real. There is, and never was, any money in place. Where is the funding source? Will there ever be one? It's so simple. If you take something that is not yours and you don't pay for it, you stole it. The master plan you are trying to write is being built with no sound foundation. The Highlands Act was so poorly thought out and written that it should be scrapped until it is right. Under the circumstance, I really don't understand how you can proceed. It's spring. This week, as I knelt planting the hundreds of oak tree seedlings for my reforesting program, as I have done for so many years, I felt sadness. The eagerness of the planting season is being so overshadowed by the unjust legislation that it's hanging over us. It is almost blocking the sun. Even the birds, they must feel the concern of my family, because they aren't singing as sweetly.
Mr. Klump, can you please wrap up your comments?
Okay. This time of year, it is a very busy time for farmers, and daytime meetings are difficult to attend. We would appreciate it if the meetings could be scheduled at a later time of day. Perhaps this isn't convenient for you, but let's face it. You know, this is wrong.
Chairman, I'll yield my time to him.
No, we don't work that way. You've spoken for 4 minutes. You know the rules.
You're
the only person who speaks here who doesn't stay within the time limit.
Did you hear what he said about what it's done to his family?
I did hear. I've heard it.
Well, I think we ought to listen to the man.
Well, not only that, Mr. Weringert, I have a problem, because you're looking for more comments, you want our comments, and now you're taking the time away that we can present our comments. We come here, you cancel meetings, and we're only allowed 3 minutes. That is unjust. You're asking for more time to complete your master plan, and I'm asking for a minute to finish my speech.
Was there anyone else who would like to speak right now?
You can have my 3 minutes.
I would like to speak.
Mr. Klump, we accept your written comments. I notice you've got them written out. We'll be glad to put them into the record.
Yeah, that's one other thing I'd like to bring up.
Not now, please.
Sir? Yeah, okay.
You want to go before me? Go ahead, sir.
Robert Fry. I'm one of the old timers that showed up last night in my work clothes. A little over a year ago, I attended a Highlands Council meeting and stated that the act was a deliberate vendetta against the farmers. And I mentioned my concerns that the state might ignore non-several exceptions which farmers had applied for in good faith as part of applications for farmland preservation. Now, 1 year later, there's been no determination on this matter. Preservation money is essentially gone, and no funding source is in place. 25 and 88-acre zoning overlays threaten both preserved and non-preserved farms in the Highlands. Transfer of development rights is touted as a solution. I am gravely concerned and suspicious of TDR because of its potential for graft in this state noted for its political corruption. A lady from the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions was correct a couple of months ago when she stated here that we are knocking on the wrong doors. But there are no other doors open to us since the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act was a deliberate Machiavellian setup planned to disenfranchise us by giving the state absolute anarchy over us and those of us who are bound to the land and who have been good stewards for New Jersey's open space.
Good evening. My name is James Kessler. I'm a farmer in the Mansfield Township, and I've spoken to you before. And I can repeat everything these fellow farmers have said, and I agree with most of it, but I'm not going to talk about that today. That's not what I'm here for, primarily. I'm here to represent Mansfield Township. They have asked me to communicate to you a resolution from the Township Committee highlighting the adverse effects of the Highlands Act on a local business that is in the preservation area. One half of the property is in the preservation area, the other half is in the planning area. It's got a railroad track run down the middle. It's a very arbitrary line was drawn. You know, it doesn't make much sense, really, to divide a business by a railroad track. But anyway, the Township Committee has passed a resolution with the official seal of Mansfield Township. The official seal of Mansfield Township, well, I will communicate to you here. And what they're asking for is first of all, let me go back. This company manufactures some small pellets that's used in electrical insulation for high voltage cables. And they employ about 120 people. And it's a very clean industry. They don't bother anybody. I live in Mansfield. They've been there for years. Rick Gardner, freeholder director ex-freeholder director of Warren County, spoke about it earlier. And all he wanted to do was to expand their parking lot a little bit with gravel so that the trucks that come in early in the morning could have a place to park right out on Rockport Road, blocking traffic. So they have a place to park before they open the gates up so they could come into the actual plant. So now they have passed this resolution, and they have also sent a copy of it to Honorable Bradley M. Campbell, Commissioner of DEP. Ellen Nurback is who's on the committee. She asked me to do this because they don't have a person to come here, and so I'm going to give it to you. I think when I send my comments obliquely related to the plan. If you're going to delay the plan, maybe you can go back and get some amendments put in it where you don't harm these small businesses who will actually leave the area. They will leave. So that's all I have to say. Okay.
Mr. Kessler, is that Borealis?
Yes, it is Borealis. Yes.
We've had some conversations with the staff, and they're reviewing that.
Okay.
And what it's able to do under the act.
Is there some way you can communicate that back to Mansfield Township? Ellen Nurback, you know.
Is that a copy? Can we have?
Yes, I'm going to do that. Yeah.
So we can follow up.
Yeah,
on
can
this
you make today? A copy of it? I'll give you what I have here. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Not quite public yet, but I just wanted to tell you all that I've appreciated working with you over the past year with you and the staff. I've worked with a lot of you in a number of different projects before, And I just wanted to let you know that if you have any land preservation issues or questions or projects, I'm still going to be in the business and would love to be of service to you. I will be with the New Jersey Conservation Foundation promoting the Greenways Project, as well as working with landowners to preserve their property. I'm sure many of them in the Highlands, but all over the state. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, Laura didn't introduce herself. This is Laura Swack, who's been on the Highlands Council staff until tomorrow. So.
Thank you. Yeah. I notice you're wearing your Morris County special recognition.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you.
I'd like to finish what I started before. I started to read it. I thought it was appropriate. Try not to repeat too much of what I said before. I'm Andy Drysdale, Chester Township. I had mentioned the slide that was repeated again, which, you know, is very deceptive. Shooting, TDRs into an area, and it shows that, like, fewer buildings is actually just the opposite. You know, they have a whole bunch of buildings on the sending area side, and very few on the receiving side. I don't think that's the way it is. And this deception is a perfect example of the type of deception that was used to create this terrible Highlands Act and the stringent and unnecessary rules subsequently set forth by the DEP. There was an article in yesterday's Morristown Daily Record entitled "State's Economy Slowing, Moderate Growth Likely through September, Fed Says." And this is all in quotes here. It was by Jeffrey Gold, Associated Press. I'm going to read two paragraphs from that. I won't read the whole thing, but it's attached the article to this letter. The fifth and sixth paragraphs read, quote, "The findings affirm that New Jersey remains in the slowest expansion since World War II, said James W. Hughes, dean of Edward J. Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy at Rutgers University. This is another quote that he is saying. "Our conclusion is that all national statistics show that high-end corporate America is expanding quite briskly, but is doing that expansion almost exclusively outside of New Jersey." He said, "New Jersey has secured a reputation over the last 4 years of being a hostile place to do business." Well, so then, as I said before, please, everyone in the room and everywhere, this stupid act has to be overturned. There are, as we saw last night, several voluntary programs already in place. These programs could be made less restrictive and thus increasing incentive. A totally voluntary TDR program without other restrictions would probably go a long way in accomplishing conservation. Again, please call, write or email the legislators and or government officials who make the laws. Explain to them and encourage them to make these important changes. The New Jersey legislature, I won't repeat the website, but you can, if you type in New Jersey legislature into a search engine, it's very easy, and it's really a good website. It'll tell you a lot of stuff about the state legislators and the bills that are before them. So, encourage everybody to do that, because this law needs to be overturned.
Thank you. I just point out that the article that Mr. Drysdale refers to was sent to all the council members on New Jersey.
So I'm glad to see you. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm Jody Anderson, a landowner in Lebanon Township. We attended the Landowners Forum last night and spoke with representatives from a couple organizations seeking to find some help for our situation. Owners of a 74-acre tree farm in the preservation area of Hunterdon County. I also asked some questions for a relative in the preservation area in Warren County. In addition to her small plot of land on which her home is, she owns a small building lot that was her nest egg. Just in one family is represented the opposite ends of the landowner's dilemma. The severe impact of the Highlands Act is having on so many people, particularly, as someone said before, those who are older, supposedly in their retirement years. I'm glad that the meeting was held. Hopefully it indicates that you recognize, at least to some degree, the hardship of landowners. I would urge you to do much more to relieve landowners of the very heavy burden that has been thrust upon us. Thank you.
Hello again, Bill O'Hearn, Highlands Coalition. Three quick points, if I may. The first one is for my friend Steve Balzano, who, whenever we've challenged him on schedule issues, has always said, well, there's a phase A and there's a phase B. Hopefully, this will be phase A and phase B in December, because we're eager to see the data that you've worked so hard to pull together. And a second scheduling question is the DEP harmonization question that Mr. Schreier is always very good about bringing up. Does this affect the way that DEP regs will be blended or worked with the Highlands Act and the Regional Master Plan? In other words, does the harmonization date move back from May to November in this case?
What's your third point?
The third point, okay, is that I've witnessed in my own town, I'm a councilman in Ringwood, as well as working for the Highlands Coalition, and a deal just closed for $500,000 for 52 acres. It's the Raykov property. It was a partnership with North Jersey District Water Supply Commission in Passaic County. And so with creativity, I know that SADC and Green Acres do still have money. Sure, we wanted to replenish Garden State Preservation Trust, but deals are ongoing. And when I spoke to SADC last night, they're looking for folks to buy land from. They're looking for customers. And I hope that their process will be refined, needs to be improved. They have recognized that. But I think with increased speed, we can get more money into landowners and farmers' pockets. That's what we all want. So it's not hopeless. They have a challenge. They're meeting that challenge. That's all I wanted to share with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll follow up.
Okay, we'll talk about
that. We'd all like to hear when you have the answer.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Anthony Petiri, in reference to my property in Independence Township in the preservation area. I have prepared a little letter with some facts that I would like to leave with you for your review.
That would be great. Thank you. Thank you.
Jerry Kern, Palatcon Township, 70 acres, preservation area. Little comment to this last gentleman from Greenwich. They're looking for land. Why don't you give them yours? Beans are paying pennies on the dollars, but you probably don't have any. I have a problem with that. I was speaking with a gentleman from Green Acres. He asked me, what I had, and I told him. And asked him how it was figured out. I told him what I didn't like about it, that they're taking all your rights other than your agricultural rights, but they're only going to pay you for your building rights. I had a problem with that. This whole bill wasn't about the building rights. It was about how environmentally important my land supposedly is. Of course, we don't have the science for that, but you're going to work on that. That's why we're going to spend another 6 months of my money and time. There should be a Highlands Preservation loan or something that fund that we are getting paid, where we are not giving up all our rights. You're taking all our rights and just want to pay us for our building rights. That's a crock. You people need to be getting back to legislation
getting funding and starting a whole nother preservation program. He even admitted that the program was out long before the Highlands, and it has nothing to do with the Highlands. Now they have to work with us. They never were set up to be working with Highlands people. They were set up for willing sellers. We're not willing sellers. We have no choice. I bought my property to keep it for me, not to give you my rights or anyone else. And if you're going to force me to sell it, then I better get paid for all my rights you're taking, because you just want to pay us for a small part of them. And if you're not going to pay us for them all, then you make a preservation bill that you're going to pay us for the rights you are going to take. Thank you.
I'm going to give you page 7 out of the New Jersey Water Supply Authority recent safe field study, over which I put an overlay of the Highlands. You will notice that this is the Raritan Basin watershed. This is the Highlands. All this land south of 78 is unprotected. Are they better stewards of the land than we are up here? They don't need the equivalent of a Highlands bill.
My name is David Shope. I live in Long Valley. Let me quote from page 4 of the same report. Justification for new model. The Raritan Basin system is not fully contracted, which allows current operations of the reservoir system to be less structured. Currently, contracted water sales are 82% of the safe yield. Thus, the system has been operated for economic rather than hydrogeological efficiency. Let me translate that. That means that they let the water rip because they don't have to sell it. It's not contracted for. They make decisions based on the cost of pumping up to Round Valley. Heaven forbid the people downstream have to pay for pumping costs. That's what that means. That's the translation of this. You should get a copy of this. The whole water issue is a phony issue. It's based on continuing to provide cheap water for the downstream users, as I just quoted to you. That's how they operate the reservoir system now. Not for our benefit. We provide the collection surface area for this water that they don't even have the decency to collect in lands that which they've already bought for reservoirs. I'm speaking of the 6 mile run down in Somerset County. The land sits there, 2,400 acres. No need for a reservoir because they can collect it up here cheap and ship it down there. That's the deal. I would not support the water tax as it's currently formulated because a tiny pittance of it goes to land preservation, and plus the sum total of it, some $12 million a year, is a pittance in itself. I asked questions at the last Water Supply Authority meeting about using some, they intend to use some part of this $12 million to rehabilitate a transfer station in Newark so they can ship even more water from the Raritan system up north, where they're short. When I asked who owned this transfer system, I didn't really get a straight answer. They thought it might have been the city of Newark. They just weren't sure. When I asked who would derive the economic benefit of such water that's transferred out of the Raritan Basin on up north, I didn't get a straight answer. There are no straight answers of this state. Let me leave that subject for the time being, but do get a copy of this report and read it. On TDRs, I suggested at the TDR meeting that now is the time for the state to step up and pay for all the lost value that has been taken away for, quote, environmental laws. In other words, the state has determined, with paid lobbyists, that the environment and the precious little creatures are just so important that they need to be protected. What that means is society has determined that my land and other land like mine is so valuable to the public, it's going to be devalued to the owner. This is crazy logic. This is worthy of Orwell. Thank you.
Susan Buck from Oxford again. On the issue of compensation for land, I guess, I just need to reiterate that I am upset to hear sound bites of we're going to expedite the Green Acres process and things like that. While that's a great thing to do and there are people that will benefit from that, do not call that compensation to landowners. That is not compensation to landowners. That's a program that exists for a small niche of the population that has a desire where that financial benefit fits that desire. That's it. That has nothing to do with what's happened to the property owners and the vast majority of property owners in the Highlands area. So please do not act like this is the way we're going to get paid. It's not. On top of it, it's going to run out of money any second. So again, legislation is required to even continue that process. The TDR is in a similar situation. It was a lot of work went, and you guys spent all day long listening to us go on and on about the TDRs, but the end result is everybody agreed. It's not going to work for a very long time. It's unlikely it will ever work without a change in the legislation. That cannot be represented as a way of compensating landowners until there are facts, hard, cold facts that show that the mathematics of that program is going to work. Right now, that doesn't exist. Until you go to the legislature and demand that those changes to the legislature be made, there is no TDR program. So I don't want to hear these two things being used to say they're ways of the landowners getting compensated, because neither one of them are viable tools.
Jim Matarazzo, Tewksbury Township. I have a small farm. I would like to say that I agree with Council Member Carluccio about the magnitude of the work that you people are undertaking and have ahead of you. I hold no animosity toward any of you. I'm, however, very, very upset. I don't live in a dictatorship. I live in what we call a free country. And they discussed last night the bundle of rights that's part of property ownership. We have lost most of those. You haven't paid us for them. You know you don't have the money. I don't know how, except for the fact that you are paid for your time, but I don't know what motivates you to come here and continue to work on this program. I don't know how you can do it. You're destroying the sense of freedom of America by working on a program that there is no money to pay for. It makes no sense. It's affecting our health. Yes, we are getting old, most of the property owners. It just seems so un-American that it discourages me. As Hank said when he's planting those trees, the spirit is not there. I have to maintain my 37 acres. I had hopes of doing additional farming operations, but it's hard to get inspired when our rights are being so compromised. And I really wish you would deeply think about this and try to take it to our governor. We are the people. This government is for us. This is not about a dictatorship, but it's how it feels. Thank you.
Our next meeting is 2 weeks, Thursday, April 20th at 4 p.m. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
6 seconds.
All those in favor?
Aye. I'm sorry. Really, I'm starting to
think. Thank you for speaking up.
final.